Shalom Aleichem. For Parshas Bahar, we have five Divrei Torah. On a high level, the Parsha focuses on the Shemitah, as we are in the midst of the Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael right now. 6 years we plant, and in the seventh year we leave the fields fallow. We don't plant. We have limitations on watering of the fields. It is a sabbatical for the fields. So that's a large portion of what we talk about in Parshas Bahar there, but there's plenty other things talking about if somebody sells a field in the land of Israel, he has the right to redeem it. We talk about preventing poverty as well. If somebody is in need, a Jew in need, vechsaktabo, we have to give him financial support. And in addition, protection to not put people into poverty, the prohibition of neshech v'tarbis, that is not lending with interest, not charging a fellow Jew interest when giving a loan. It should be interest-free. And also towards the end of the Parsha, at the end of the Parsha, we talk about the Jewish slave who became impoverished. Not really a slave, it's an indentured servant. And there are a lot of limitations on the quote-unquote slavery. It's not exactly like a common slavery. But in any case, we're going to start at the beginning of the Parsha. We'll talk a lot about Shemitah right now. And the first line in the Parsha, famous line, it's actually a famous chazal that Rashi brings, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe behar Sinai lemor, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, and Har Sinai and talks about the Shemitah, and Rashi brings, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, why do you have to tell us that the Shemitah laws were given at Har Sinai, all the halachas were given at Har Sinai? What's the chiddush here to say that specifically Shemitah was given at Har Sinai? So the Kometz HaMincha of the Maharal Harif says that in fact Shemitah and Har Sinai are the same concept, the exact same concept. So when it comes to the mitzvah Shemitah, Shemitah is there to instill within us the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fully involved in this world, in the details of this world. And oftentimes, there are people who say, God, he's lofty, he's up there, he doesn't get involved in the details, not looking at the small stuff, but that is incorrect. What Shemitah teaches us is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in the small stuff as well, how things grow, how things are planted, how things are watered, when we have to refrain, and the like. And the big concept here, Chazal tell us, is we see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'makam gdulasa. When we see the greatness, we also see the anivus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that despite the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the loftiness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nonetheless, he is paying attention, he is involved, and he is fully in control of the small things in the world as well. That is the Shemitah, the planting, the soil, everything, all of those details. But what's the connection to Har Sinai? So the concept here, and this is actually the proof that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkaf is not to stay only above and to be lofty and uninvolved in this world, but in fact to be fully involved in this world to the smallest detail, is the concept that we see in Chazal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Har Sinai, the smallest, the lowest of the mountains in the Sinai, Har Sinai. And why was that? To show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the concept is to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves modesty, not fancy things and lavish things and the biggest and the best and the most expensive, but rather the most modest Har, the most modest of the mountains. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, to give the greatest of the Torah, the lofty we would think would be the greatest and the loftiest. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants lowliness. And that shows HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Shoresh Shechina. He came down for Matan Torah to the lowest hill. To the lowest hill. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying. Don't think I'm above and only above and saying above or only on the lofty mountains. I'm all the way down with you, all the way down on the ground, in the details, involved fully in this world. And that's the concept here, that Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, why do we see this connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai? That it's the same concept, just like the Shemitah is in the ground, is in all the details, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved and cares, so too when it comes to Har Sinai, it was all the way down, the lowest of the mountains. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he comes down and descends into this world to the lowest points. And in fact, that same concept of the greatness, but being involved in the details, lahavdil. It's going to be in the secular realm, but we do see is that if you work for certain managers, and I've seen it in a couple times, that there's some that just want to manage. They're in their office, they're managing high level and not getting involved in the details. That's one type of manager, one type of executive or CEO. Then there are other types that get involved in the details, and in the details and the important details. And what I've seen is those that are both above, understanding the big picture and also involved in the details and the necessities of the business, those are the most successful. Those are the most successful executives. And the Havdil, Aleph Havdal, is what we see a Kodesh Baruch Hu based on the concept of Shemitah and also based on the concept of Har Sinai, the giving of the Torah, is above but is fully below and involved as well. We are now moving forward to the next pasuk. This is Dvar Torah number 2. Vishavta Haaret Shabbos Lashem. The land has a sabbatical to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Mata Moshe says that the whole reason of the Shemitah, the concept of the Shemitah, letting the land rest, is because, we're going to do a little bit of math here, hopefully simple math, but the concept he says here is to reflect the Shabbases that the land was still working throughout the Shemitah cycle. So despite the fact that we have Shabbos, we don't work the land, but the land is still working. It's working throughout every Shabbos, every day of the week, and every Shabbos as well. So it didn't really get a break on Shabbos, and we have to make that up to the ground for all the times that it was working on Shabbos, and that is why it has the Shemitah. So let's go through. If we have a year that is 365 days, it's a solar year, how many Shabbos is there? So approximately 52 Shabbos in every year. And a year, Shabbos is 52 Shabbos is that the land was working. And if we have 7 years of the Shemitah cycle, that is going to be 7 years times 52. That is going to be equal to 364 Shabbos is that the land was working. So accordingly, that land gets a Shabbos, but a bonus of the entire Shemitah cycle, the entire Shemitah year, the Shemitah year, to make up for all those Shabbos that it was working. So that is level number one, says the Mata Moshe. We're making it up for the Shabbos that the land was working, and that's why it's a Shemitah year. The Shemitah year reflects all those Shabbos throughout the Shemitah cycle. And in fact, the land actually works throughout the Shemitah cycle. We're a little bit going to double count the Shemitah year here, but we won't care too much about that. The Shemitah year itself, the land is working as well for something called the Sfichin. Sfichin is a concept. It's actually a prohibition on a rabbinic level that even if you didn't work the field actively, but the field grew vegetables that were planted the prior year and the sixth year, and they grew by themselves. For example, you had the strawberry plant still on the ground and they continued to grow, or you had the seeds in the ground from the prior year and they grew by themselves. You didn't actually do that. Chazal said you can't even use that during the Shemitah year as well. So because of that, we have the land working throughout even all the Shemitah cycles, through the Shemitah years, and that's 52 Shabbos is in each of the Shemitah years. So after seven cycles of Shemitah, that means seven Shemitah years, that's going to be as well. That's going to be 7 years of Shemitah times the 52 Shabbos is that we have the Sfichin, that growth that continues into the year. Even though we're not growing it, that's another 364 Shabbos we have to make up from the land. And that is going to be the Yovel year. That is going to be the 50th year of the Shemitah cycle. So we go to 49 years. That was seven cycles of Shemitah, 7 years of Shemitah, and times the 52 Shabbos is, that is 365. So we have to have the Yovel year accordingly to make up for the working of the land during the Shemitah years when the Sfichin were growing. So that is number two. Number three, we are moving forward to same Perek, but Psukim Chaf and Chaf Aleph. And the Pasuk says, if you're going to come and say you're concerned, because it means when you take off for the Shemitah year, then your produce has to grow on the sixth year, and we're not planting the seventh year, we're not planting, we're not harvesting, now we're gathering, etc. So we need food from the sixth year, and we have the seventh year, and the eighth year is not going to be growing yet until the eighth year. What manocha, what are we going to eat? This isn't very good financial planning, apparently. So what are we going to eat? So if the pasuk says, if you will say, not everyone's going to say this, but if you will say, what should we eat on the seventh year? We're not planting, we're not, etc. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'tzivisi es birchasi. In that case, once you ask, I am going to command my bracha, that the bracha is going to be that the sixth year produce will be bountiful, and it will continue for 3 years. It will supply your needs for the sixth year and the Shemitah year and the seventh year, and also the eighth year we're going to need, because it's not like you put seeds in the ground and everything pops up immediately. So you're going to need for the eighth year as well until you have your own harvesting from the new crop. So the Noam Elimelech brings in the name of his brother Zusha as follows. If you're going to ask, what are we going to eat? There will be a need that I will give the bracha. In other words, this isn't a lechatchila. It's not the ideal thing that a Kaddish Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give you the bracha for the sixth year, that the produce will be bountiful, and it will suffice you for the sixth, seventh, and eighth year. That's not the ideal. If you ask, I'll give you the bracha. But, Baram, ilu haisa behem emuna tamima, if you had pure emuna, Kaddish Baruch Hu, you wouldn't be asking that question, because you knew you'd have the bracha anyway. You would have the bracha even without asking. So what's going on here with only if you ask, man ochal, are you going to have the bracha? And it seems like the bracha is not the ideal thing. So it goes like this. There are certainly generations, many generations, that don't have that pure emunah. We don't have that pure emunah, and we're going to want to know, al pi teva, al pi nature, where's our parnasa going to come from? And indeed, if we ask that question, the answer is going to be, okay, I'll give you a bracha, and what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, because you're asking al pi tev, al pi nature, within the nature of this world, how are we going to be able to survive? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will wrap up the bracha that otherwise you would receive, but I'll make it look like nature, because you're talking nature. But truth be told, the greatest nace, the greatest miracle, is nature itself. And in other words, if people can realize that nature, when things work naturally, that we view as nature, that is the greatest miracle possible. If we think about our bodies, we take it for granted. But that the body works is an unbelievable concept. And that we digest, and that the blood pumps, and the heart pumps, and the oxygen goes through the lungs. It's an unbelievable concept. We think that's nature, but that's a nace. Teva and nace, nature and miracles, are the same thing. An unbelievable concept. So here we have it, that if you have emunah pshuta, if you have true emunah, we will default that everything, we believe that everything in nature is a nace, we'll have the nace, we'll have it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will supply our parnasa, and everything will be miraculous, as it always is, because even in a normal year when we have a parnasa, we take it for granted that we have a parnasa, but that's a miraculous concept that we were able to earn money. That's a nace from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the issue here is when we have people, and that's really many of us, most of us, speak for myself, that we look at nature and we don't really think about it that it's a miraculous thing. But we simply have a division. There's nature and there's miracle. If we're in that mind, in that mode of thinking that I need to know naturally how am I going to have a parnasa, that's not ideal, because the ideal is we should have emunah pshuta. Everything is miraculous, even nature miraculous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will supply. There will be a bracha. All will work out. But if that's not our thought, and we're saying there's a difference between nature and miracle, and when it comes to parnasa, this is a natural thing I need to know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you're already asking, not the ideal that you're asking, but I will be sure to wrap up the nace that would otherwise you would have. It's a miracle, and it'll look like nature for you. And you'll have the bracha, and you'll have the sixth year, and the food will be bountiful for the sixth year, and the seventh year, and eighth year as well. That is the Sfas Emes explaining beautifully that only if you ask for it, then you'll get it. You'll get it either way. But if you're not asking, that means you're already believing that that nace is the same as teva, that miracle is the same as nature, and you're in that mind, you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu will supply you miraculously. Once we're asking, okay, you'll get the bracha. You'll get the bracha, but it'll just look like nature, because that's on the lever that you're on. That is the Sfas Emes. We are now moving forward, further towards the end of the parsha, talking about when there is a Jew in need, v'achzaktabo, we have to give him financial support. And we are now in Perek Chavches, Pasuk Lamed Vav. This is Dvar Torah number 4. Al tikach mitoneshev v'tarbis. When you give a loan to somebody, when somebody's in need, don't charge interest. Neshech is from the language of nishicha, that it bites. And that is pointing towards the borrower, that when he's charged interest, it bites him because it accrues and it goes up and up. And tarbis is from the perspective of the lender, that he gets a lot. but that is prohibited and it will work against him. So don't charge neshech, don't charge tarbis, v'chei achicha imach, and your brother, your brethren, the needy Jews should live together with you. In other words, the pashtus is don't charge him interest, enable him to live by giving him an interest-free loan, and he will be able to get back on his feet. Now, the Yalkut HaOrim says as follows, that we have a couple klalim, a couple principles. Number one is that somebody who lends another Jew and charges interest will not be zoche to tchias ameisim, will not be zoche to resurrection. We'll see why such a severe thing in the next Torah. But let's just take that chazal for now. Lending, it says don't lend. You want to help a Jew. You're not helping a Jew. You're hurting a Jew if you lend with interest. And accordingly, you will not be resurrected tchias ameisim. You weren't helping people. We're not going to help you. Tchias ameisim is somebody who's worthy of it, that you were charging interest to another Jew and is having a difficult time. That is point number one. Point number two, principle number two, is when it comes to ribis, when it comes to lending, borrowing, just as the lender is punished, it's not only a prohibition on the lender, it is a prohibition on the borrower as well. These are isurim, these are things that we cannot opt out of. Another example would be going to a secular court. It's prohibited to go to a secular court under most circumstances. But how about if the two litigants, the defendant and the plaintiff, decide we're going to go to secular court? We want to opt out of the halacha. It doesn't work that way. It's prohibited to go to secular court. The same thing here. Even if the lender and borrower agree on the loan and the amount and the ribis, fine, we're also okay. We're okay. Certainly the lender's going to be okay with it, but even the borrower's going to be okay with it. It's prohibited. It's prohibited. So we have these two principles here. Number one, anyone who lends, charges interest to a fellow Jew, will not be zocha tchias ameisim. And number two, the punishments go for both the lender and the borrower. Accordingly, when we look at our pasuk, tichach mito neshev etarbis, when talking about charging interest, lender, don't charge interest. Borrower, also don't pay interest. But rather, rak im lo tichach mimen ribis. It's only if you give a loan and you don't charge interest, then bechei achicha imach, that is when your brethren, talking about the borrower, will live together with you. What is that talking about? That is talking about the tchias amesim, the resurrection. In other words, if you charge for interest, neither you will be resurrected. But if you don't charge for interest, al tikach mitonesh v'tarbis, don't charge him interest. And if that's the case and you didn't charge interest, bechei achicha imach, he will live together with you. That means that both of you will be have tchias ameisim, will be zocha to have tchias ameisim, will be resurrected, mirtz Hashem, in the future when we are zocha to have tchias ameisim. So the chei achicha imach, he will live together, is talking about with for eternity. If you give this loan and don't charge interest, you will live together for eternity because you will have tchias ameisim and live for eternity. Now, number five, why is this such a serious issue that somebody who charges interest is is punished so terribly? So we're now moving on to Perek Chaf Ches Pasuk Lamed Ches, and it says as follows: Ani Hashem Elokechem Asher Hotzeisi Etzchem Eretz Mitzrayim. I am a Kodesh Baruch Hu took you out of Eretz Mitzrayim. So the Yalkut says as follows: Kol Amode BeMitzvos Ribis Mode BeYitzias Mitzrayim. Anyone who agrees to the mitzvah of ribis, in other words, he doesn't charge ribis, embraces this mitzvah, gives loans, and doesn't charge interest to a fellow Jew, he indeed is acknowledging Yitzias HaMitzrayim. He is acknowledging HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt. On the other hand, V'chol HaKofer B'mitzvos Ribis, anyone who disregards the mitzvah of ribis, in other words, he lends money to a borrower, but he charges interest. That is somebody who is kofer be Yitzias Mitzrayim. He is denying Yitzias Mitzrayim. He's denying Yitzias Mitzrayim. So what is going on here, says the Ksav Sofer, the connection between Ribis and Yitzias Mitzrayim? So let's think about it. Somebody has extra funds that he should be giving a loan to a Jew. And there's a needy Jew. He needs that loan desperately. So what's the lender going to be thinking? This is my hard-earned money, and I don't want to simply give it to somebody without being paid, and there's a time value of money, and it's going to, with an inflation, so it's going to be less when I get paid back, and I could be investing that money at the same time. Why should I lend it to somebody? I don't want to do that. If he wants to charge me interest, good, but I'm not going to lend it interest-free. So, says the Ksav Sofer as follows, let's think about this. If somebody comes up to you, and this is his mashal, somebody comes up to you and says, I'm going to give you money. This money is for you. Not charging anything, it's yours. But I have a condition attached to it. The condition is when any of your children have a need, you're going to lend them the money interest-free. Interest-free for your children. Who would turn down that gift of money? And who would turn down that condition? The condition is you're going to be giving it to somebody in need who you're so close to, your children. That's a great deal for the recipient of the money. Here's the money for you. This is a gift from me. But you just have to adhere to the condition when there's a needy person in your family, when your children, give them an interest-free loan. The same thing, says the Ksav Sofer, applies to us when we were taken out of Mitzrayim by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, out of Egypt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us tremendous wealth. He gave gold and silver and lots of assets. And now that we come out of Mitzrayim and he gives us the Torah, the condition was, when you have excess funds, when you have money, I want you to be lending it to my children, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I want you to be lending it to other Jews, not charging neshech v'ribis, not charging interest, but I want you to give it, ideally with a smile. Don't get upset. This is your mitzvah. This is the gift that I'm giving you of wealth. And when you have the opportunity, when you have somebody needy, one of my children, a yid, give it to them interest-free. And accordingly, we can now understand that somebody who embraces this, somebody who embraces this and gives a loan without interest is saying, I acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the gift that you gave us. And this is only, to add on, this is only not only a gift when we came out of Mitzrayim, but throughout, whenever we have Parnassah, whenever we're able to earn a living, that is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gives us our abilities, he gave us our hands and our minds, and whatever kelim we need to earn a parnasa, and if we're able to earn a parnasa accordingly, that's a tremendous gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if somebody has that gift and says, this money that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me on condition that when another Jew, a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, needs this loan and I don't give it, I am denying that gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. I'm denying it, see, as Mitzrayim, the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us when we got out of Mitzrayim. But on the other hand, somebody who embraces this and says, I have this money in my possession, a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, starting all the way Yetzias Mitzrayim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the gifts, the money of gold and silver, throughout till now, when everyone, somebody has a parnasa, it is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And indeed, they give that loan. They give that loan to a needy Jew. They are embracing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them this gift. They are saying thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving this gift to hold, to use for the proper purposes, and embracing Yetzias Mitzrayim, the first time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us such wealth, in order to use it for the proper purpose. Thanks so much for listening.